Welcome to the Health Science Coach Podcast. My name is Drew Garner, and I'm a health science and physical education teacher. This is a podcast to help students, parents, and recent graduates learn about pathways into healthcare and sports medicine careers. These industry professionals lay out how their experiences have helped them get to where they are now. If you enjoy this content, please subscribe to the channel or download through your podcast player. Thanks again for spending some time with us today. Now let's dig in. I want to take this time to thank you for listening and learning about the different healthcare and sports medicine careers we have discussed so far on this podcast. If you'd like to hear about a specific career or know someone that wants to share about their career and passion for their work, please leave a comment in the section below. Remember to stay happy, healthy, and live life with passion. In this 49th episode today, we get the pleasure of meeting with Melanie Allmeyer. She's a freelance medical and educational interpreter. Being an interpreter in the medical field, what are some of the things on a daily or weekly basis that kind of, what's the job kind of entail and look like?
Okay. Well, first I have to tell you that I am a freelance medical certified interpreter. So my day is different. Every day is different.
Okay.
Because it's mixed with not only doing it for pay, but also as a volunteer.
Right.
And as a medical interpreter, I am the voice of two parties that don't understand the same language. So I'm facilitating the communication between two people that don't speak the same language. In my case, it's Spanish English. Okay. And so it's a tremendous responsibility to be very accurate, to be very respectful, professional, understand cultures, the different cultures. Be impartial and confidential. And I can, as a freelance certified medical interpreter, I can be in a doctor's office, sessions, physical therapy and OT, occupational therapy or speech therapy sessions, interpret during a surgical procedure in a surgical center as opposed to a hospital.
Right.
And I've also helped out in research. Recently, I interpreted at a research study at KU for physical therapy.
Oh, that's awesome. That's pretty interesting. Being able to, I mean, you're in all those different scenes and being able to see the steps that go along with that throughout the whole process from, you know, the initial meeting to all the way to the surgery, like you kind of said, and then the physical therapy afterwards. So you're able to kind of get a good spectrum of all the different career paths that are out there while helping your patients understand what's going on to them with that language barrier. Mm-hmm. So as a freelance interpreter, how do you go about getting different, paying gigs or with hospitals or medical locations? How does that kind of play out?
Sure. Well, I work for several agencies.
Okay.
One of them I can mention. The other, as an interpreter, we don't like to talk about our agencies because we're pretty competitive. So it's not something I would share unless I'm very close with them because... anyway, that they are the ones that would text me a job.
Okay.
I can tell you that I do work for Jewish Vocational Service, not just as a freelance interpreter, but also I'm a trainer of their basic program. We'll talk more about that for the educational piece. So basically, they send me a job, whether, you know, it's through texting or there's a special app called Fluency.
Okay.
And I see a job come up. If I can do it, I accept it. If I can't, I decline it.
Right.
And certainly if I decline too many, they're not going to ask me as much anymore. But I have some other colleagues that work for about 5 or 6 different agencies.
Okay.
So it's however many I want.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So you're able to set your own kind of schedule, be able to do those things. Now, have you seen a trend in any kind of change in telehealth versus inpatient health recently?
Oh, definitely. Certainly with this coronavirus, it's telehealth so much more more popular or more necessary.
Yeah.
We've always had, you know, I always did in-person and I did some phone interpreting.
Okay.
I prefer the in-person, but I've done phone. Well, now the remote, meaning video on Zoom, I've done Zoom physical therapy sessions. There are seminars that are dedicated just to that right now. That is so popular, and having good technology—that's a huge
absolutely
better technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I think too, with, you know, being able to do some of that telehealth, you're able to, you know, not necessarily you have to see a certain amount of clients or patients or without throughout the day, but you're able to get to more appointments to help more people interpret versus driving from one hospital to a different location. So I think that aspect of it's kind of interesting as well.
It is, but you also have to be very careful though, because you can get burned out easily too.
Yes.
If you get too many, you know, and you don't have much pause time, it fries your brain at times. You know, when you're consistently, you know, being this language converter, you know, or voice, you know, you do need to have self-care. That needs to be built into it. And I think a lot of interpreters kind of forget about that at times, giving yourself breaks.
Okay. So you have a bachelor's in Spanish and human services and a master's in marketing. Let's kind of talk about how you chose those kind of degrees to pursue and then your certification as well.
Sure. Well, I went for my undergraduate degree at Washington University in St. Louis, and I chose Spanish because I took Spanish in high school.
Okay.
And I always enjoyed that, and I was able to quiz out of some levels of Spanish. So I sort of felt like that gave me a good, you know, kind of gave me a leg up when I started college.
Right.
And when I heard that I could spend a whole year studying and exploring Spain, I just thought, man, I was very excited about that. So Washington University didn't have a program. They do now. Most colleges do. And most kids go study for, you know, semester, whatever. But I really wanted to study. And it just so happened Marquette University collaborated with Washington University. And so I was able to go to that program where I actually went with students. Students were all American, but we had Spanish professors and all the classes were in Spanish. And it was amazing.
That's awesome.
The best experiences of my life. I learned a lot about myself, but I also really immersed myself in the Spanish culture.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So with that degree as well as a marketing degree, how does that help you with your certified freelance interpreter profession?
Okay. Well, I also want to add another thing that I did also get later. I got a master's in romance languages at UMKC because I felt that my Spanish, I was kind of losing it. If you don't use it, you lose it. And so I, even though I tutored students from high school when my kids were young, I decided that once my kids got to be, you know, in high school, that I would go back for my, master's in romance languages, which I did. And then I got to study in Jalapa, Mexico. So I had 30 years between my study in Spain and my study in Mexico, where I also got to immerse myself in the culture. And that really, after I finished my master's in romance languages, I started thinking about some different things that I wanted to do. I could teach on the college level. Right. I had already been a teacher also, you know, elementary and high school before this point. And so I just had heard that Johnson County Community College had a 3-semester course on medical interpreting. They also have one on legal interpreting too, but that wasn't the area that I was as interested in. Right. So I completed that course, and I really, you know, it took some real focus, because we had an internship at Truman Medical Center.
Okay.
And that was a tremendous eye-opener. I don't think anybody should go into this field without observing, without going into it, knowing what's involved, because especially in a hospital, that's where you can have a full-time career. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing is very much, you know, freelance. So I just feel that that really launched me into realizing that I much prefer being going into doctor's offices. Also, I do educational, so that allows me to go in and help out with parent-teacher conferences, right, help out at Start home visits. I just had a broader exposure.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that 3-semester program then, kind of what did that look like as far as class-wise or time to get certified?
Okay. I was able to go. It was all part-time. I mean, in the evenings, because other people were working full-time. So this is a great thing. You just, in order to become, an interpreter, you need to at least be 18 years old and have a high school education. That's the basics.
Yeah.
So I was able to go. All my classes were in the evening. And then when I did my internship, I could choose what hours I wanted. So that was 3 semesters. I also want to add that I did another program, the one that I actually am teaching now, through Jewish Vocational Service, and that was called Bridging the Gap. Okay. And that's a 42-hour program that is actually a prerequisite before you could ever sit and take a certification exam. You have to have the minimum of that.
Okay, perfect. So you do teach that program now?
I do. We had to kind of lay off a little bit because of coronavirus, unfortunately. I was offering the classes on Thursdays, but there's another teacher that teaches it, who actually was my trainer, who teaches it on Saturdays. So it's something that students could do, or somebody who's graduated from high school and do and still have another career.
So as a part of that 42 hours before you're able to sit and take that exam to be a certified interpreter, what do those 42 hours kind of look like as far as class time or seat time or classes that you take during that program?
Okay. Well, you have a textbook.
Okay.
And you have to, and there are dialogues that you do, that you learn, that you practice the actual role with role playing.
Right.
But it's so important to learn the ethics, like I kind of alluded to earlier, about being accurate, professional, respectful, confidential. I mean, very important. The standards of practice, medical terminology is so important. Okay. Just knowing 2 languages does not mean you could be a good interpreter. You really have to have that medical back and the curiosity to keep learning. It's a lifelong process. I'm learning new concepts, relearning, because if I haven't used them for a while.
Yeah. Especially, I think, with that medical terminology, I think that's part of the key. You know, being able to interpret, not only understand what it means in one language, but being able to interpret it and explain it to someone in a different language that doesn't really know what's going on.
Right. And that's so important, Mr. Gardner, because people think sometimes, I think people don't understand that interpreting, it's not word for word. It's meaning for meaning.
Right.
I'm the voice and I don't want to change anything, add anything or omit anything. But if I don't understand what a rotator cuff surgery is, it's going to be very hard for me to get the full meaning across.
Right.
To the people. So I check podcasts. I do a lot of research background, beforehand.
Yeah, absolutely. So after you take those 42 hours, you kind of said, you're able to take that certification test. What does that test kind of look like as far as becoming a certified medical interpreter?
Okay. Well, I would just have to add one thing. I would never start to take that class unless I had a lot of experience in the field. On-the-job training is huge. So you can volunteer. I'll just give you, I'll throw this out. The clinic called JDoc that KU Med students run is a very good opportunity to volunteer. I'm sure, you can find various places. But what basically the certification exam looks like, it is through CCHI. I just want to mention that the Certification Commission for Healthcare Interpreters. You just go on the website is cchicertification.org. And there's a first part of it is oral. It's written on the computer. I went to JUCO, had an appointment set up to take that exam. I think it's 50 questions, multiple choice, maybe 100, I can't remember. And right at the end, after you take that exam, whether you've passed or failed. Okay. And you pay for this. This costs money. And then you're given 6 weeks between the time you pass that written exam. Then there's the oral exam. And the oral exam is you are taking it by yourself at an agency where you're in front of a computer. You've got a pad of paper. You can take some notes. But you are given these vignettes. Somebody is speaking. It's a recorded situation where somebody is the patient, and you are then your responses are being recorded. So it's much more nerve wracking. I mean, you really have to practice. I formed a study group. I spent a lot of my time in high school and college forming study groups. I was the queen of study groups. So I had 2 other friends that were better than I am, spoke Spanish better. One actually is a retired Spanish teacher. The other one is actually one of the people you're going to be interviewing.
Okay. Yeah.
And anyway, we worked together and we practiced with our dialogues. And every time we came across a word or term or whatever, we looked it up. So a lot of practice. And then I passed it. But then once you pass, you do have to keep up your certification. You do have to continue to take webinars. You know, you pay for this. You pay for the exam, too. But you pay for webinars. And every 4 years, you have to have 32 hours.
Okay.
It's a lifelong process.
Right.
If you want to be an interpreter, you have to keep it up.
That's one of the questions I was going to ask about professional development. So every 4 years, 32 hours of professional development through webinars or classes outside of in hospitals or different types of settings. What are some of the industry trends as far as medical interpreting that you may have seen in the last, 3 years or so?
Only increasing. I just read recently that by 2026, it would be growing by 8%.
Okay.
There are like 40,000 Latinos that reside in Johnson County and Wyandotte counties. Only is growing. And so I think it's an excellent profession and it's something that can be done on the side, like what I'm doing. I feel like I'm obviously probably older than a lot of the people on your podcast, but it just goes to show that any chapter of your life, and I think it would, I know a med student that got his certification before he became a doctor, and he was doing medical interpreting to earn money.
Right.
So it's something that can be done that way.
So with that, what benefits, say if you're a nurse or if you're a physician or a physical therapist, any type of career out there that's healthcare related, are they able to also then be certified as interpreters as themselves, or is it just if they just like speak Spanish as well?
No. They can't. It's obviously much better. You're much more professional because you learn that it is a profession. It's not just something you happen to speak Spanish. You could be a great, as a doctor. I've been in situations where a provider thinks that I don't even think he majored in Spanish, but he was a good student in high school. And he just thought, oh, I can speak Spanish. No, it's he could. I mean, I allowed that to happen, but then I was there to make sure that
it was the right
understanding. So the more somebody can become, look at this as a profession and not just, oh, I just happen to know Spanish or I'm a heritage speaker. I grew up with, Spanish in my home.
Right.
It's going to be better. And medical students, if you go that route, and I'm sure I guess it would probably be the same thing with nursing and PT. There are courses that you can take online, like to learn medical terminology. You don't have to become a certified medical interpreter, but at least be more familiar because the trends are showing that the Latino population is growing,
absolutely.
Faster than a lot of other segments in our population.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some of the misconceptions you might see out there that people may think about when they hear medical interpreter?
Well, like I just alluded to, I think, anybody that speaks Spanish, grows up with Spanish or took it in high school or college, or even if you took it in college, that they could be an interpreter. And I think that because it's a young profession and people just don't realize that there's a lot more involved to it. There's actually special positioning.
Right.
It's actually special techniques, like having somebody speak a couple sentences, pause, and then you speak. You also, as an interpreter, are controlling or managing the flow of the conversation. You clarify when you don't think somebody understands.
Mm-hmm.
And that could go either way, by looking at nonverbals, knowing that you have to be culturally competent, knowing that everything needs to be confidential, everything that stays there. You are part of the healthcare team. You're an essential part of the healthcare team. So, I think people just think, it's just a little extra thing, and it's not.
Yeah, just like you said, just because it's a heritage speaker, you grew up speaking Spanish, that you're not necessarily going to know all the specific medical terminology. Absolutely. So we kind of talked about your love for Spanish and love for, the culture and all that kind of stuff. How did you kind of choose medical profession to be a translator as far as that direction versus, teaching high school Spanish or college Spanish?
Okay. Well, I kind of did a little bit of everything. I just want to point out there really is a big difference between being an interpreter and being a translator. An interpreter, it's all oral. The interpreting, and that's the world I work in, oral. Translator is actually written.
Okay.
So a book being translated, you know, sometimes I do a little bit of both, but I really, my toolkit is really in the oral piece of it. And I would just say that, I'm sorry, Mr. Gunner, repeat the question as I kind of got off in the translator part.
Yeah, no, just going into the medical side versus the teaching side of Spanish.
Okay. Well, I feel like I kind of do both.
You know?
I mean, I love to be in the elementary school, so that, you know, or school system with conferences. Mm-hmm. So I do the educational and the community too. But I think what I feel so grateful for is that, you know, my dad is a retired podiatrist. And then I have family that are in the medical profession. So right. I always loved biology. I loved learning about health and so forth. And I feel like this has given me an opportunity to learn, not just for other people and just the field, but also for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And the older I get, the more I'm, because of my own experience and family and friends, you know, with different health situations. I mean, it's just fascinating to me, but I had to be very careful as an interpreter because I'm the voice. I can't ask questions that I would normally ask if I were in that situation.
Yeah.
I have to be impartial. I can't influence the patient. A lot of times I have questions. Oh my gosh, why isn't this patient asking about da 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 da? You know, that's not my place. But
right.
I love to learn, and I'm fascinated by the human body.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I didn't think about, you know, you can't be impartial one way or the other to the doctor or the patient, or ask them, hey, did you think about this? Because you're not there as a healthcare provider. You're the, like we've talked about, the interpreter for them. So throughout your career, what is something that you feel like you're most proud of achieving?
I just feel so good when I feel like a patient has really been able to access, or patient or a client, whomever, mm-hmm. is really able to access services that they wouldn't have been able to access otherwise, or that their health outcome, that I've had a part in that.
Yeah.
Explain, to be there, to actually, you know, I don't hold their hand because, again, I'm a voice, but yep. my presence there with them and building that trust. I love connecting with other people, and I love feeling like I really do help them. I make a positive impact on their experience, and it's so gratifying to me when they thank me, or, you know, and their family thanks me, and the provider, people are grateful, you know, and I like being part of that whole process.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting to be able to see, you know, that process and develop throughout, you know, meeting that first time meeting the patient and to helping them through their medical needs. Do you have anything that you wish you would have changed along your course of career path or have done earlier or differently?
Yes. And I was talking to my parents about this just the other day, because I think I really wanted to stay in Spain one more year.
Okay.
After my junior year, I had told my parents, I mean, I begged them to even stay for a year. They only wanted me to go for a semester, and they thought that I'd get off my academic track. I just wish that I would have had one more year where I would have worked in Spain. I think that, and I had it all set up, but then, you know, I wish I could have signed a contract that said, I promise I will be back and finish my undergraduate degree. I guess my big thing is, the more I can immerse myself in another culture, really learn the language. I wish I could have done that more. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's not that I don't feel like I can do that again. I mean,
right.
I having done it in Mexico, and then I've got other ideas down the road. But I wish that I would have, maybe if I would have thought about interpreting earlier on, I would have gone to graduate school, like in Monterey, in California, where they focus just on interpreting and translating. That would have been, I've always been curious about how differently my life would have, the path I would have taken. I would have become a lot more fluent, culturally uh-huh. competent. You know, I just would have gained more knowledge earlier on in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. So then kind of what we're going to move into next is career goals. You said, you know, you have some ideas of what you kind of want to do in the future. Where do you see yourself maybe 5 to 10 years down the road professionally?
Well, I see myself continuing to, you know, take my webinars and so forth and keep up my medical certification. I feel like I could be doing this work as long as I wanted to, as long as my mind is good. And the best way to keep my mind good is to keep exercising it.
Yeah.
This is a little off, but I want to learn another language. I'm planning on learning Italian.
Okay.
You know, but I just see myself, I mean, as long as, I mean, maybe, you know, adding on another agency or so.
Yeah.
But I also see myself continuing to volunteer. I love to volunteer at JDoc, that, you know, walk-in free health clinic that AMED students run. I also volunteer at the hospital. I'm doing it on the phone at KU as a volunteer chaplain. So I see myself as a real volunteer and also, you know, continuing on with my professional credentials.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of what we talked about a little bit also is, you know, what's something you wish you would have known in high school or college that would help you with your career now? Obviously, learning about medical interpreting would have definitely changed a lot, but just maybe study habit wise, or, you know, we've talked a little bit about volunteering or shadowing, that kind of stuff. What's something that you wish you would have known about back then that would help you now?
Oh, I think just tapping into the Latino community.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that before. And, you know, in the volunteering, in the shadowing. I mean, we just didn't do that. We had a career notebook way back when, you know, and I, you know, that's when I got involved. I learned about becoming a UN interpreter, and I thought, man, that's the gold standard to be able to do that. You know, I guess I just would have wish I would have had a broader view of art of Kansas City to know about the different communities. I think we're such a rich, we don't even realize it. Living in, you know, where I grew up, you know, I wasn't aware of all the different pockets of ethnicities throughout our city. And we're so rich. We've got so many different communities here. And I wish I would have known more about that.
Absolutely. I think that's pretty good to know, you know, just looking outside of your general population or where your school is or whatever. But, you know, Kansas City's it's a big, small city, but it's lots of different pockets. And, you know, if you venture out of wherever you're not familiar with, there's some pretty cool, interesting areas out there. So this next question is kind of a four-part question. It's advice for students. So we're going to kind of look at the high school student that's interested in getting into medical interpreting, a college student, and then a recent graduate, and then somebody that's been in the workforce for 3 to 6 months. So if I have a college, you know, let's say, or a high school, sophomore, junior, or senior that says, you know, I've grown up speaking Spanish, I'm interested in learning about, healthcare, and, you know, I don't want to be a doctor, I don't want to be a nurse, but I like medical terminology class. We have that here at Turner, which is pretty cool. I really like the stuff. I like anatomy. I like physiology, but I don't want to be a doctor. I want to be a medical interpreter. What's some advice that you would have for them as someone kind of getting into it after high school?
Okay. I think those are, you know, I'm so glad you have a lot more offerings at your school than I had when I was growing up. I'd say do really well in your Spanish classes too. Okay. Take very seriously, read in Spanish, watch movies in Spanish, you know, get bilingual books.
Right.
This will help your Spanish. Also, English. Do really well in your English classes too, because you need to be able to understand what providers are saying, what educators are saying. Let's see. I think that's, you know, I would just say, you know, you have a tremendous advantage being in such a good high school, having access to a great education. Do as much as you can there, and then also, you know, look around and see if you can observe, you know. Maybe give a call over to one of the, you know, a hospital nearby and see if you might be able to observe a professional interpreter for an afternoon. You know, that would give you a better idea of what's involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And then looking at a college student, you know, somebody that's, let's say 20, 21 years old, they're in college, they're been taking the English classes, they've been taking the Spanish classes, they're minoring or majoring in Spanish. and they want to become a medical interpreter. What's some advice you would have for them?
Okay. Travel. Do as much as you can to immerse yourself in the Spanish-speaking community. Maybe go on a missions trip.
Okay.
I wish I would have done that. I know there was, I think there's still this program called Amigos. Maybe that's a high school thing.
Okay.
But I'm sure you could find out through JUCO, through, you know, some other KU. I mean, I know these exist.
Right.
I think it's a good organization, JUNTOS. You know, try to find some places where maybe you could for a summer or for a month, or maybe there's some, you know, other organizations. I think churches go and do, you know, missions trips, you know, whatever. But I would just say the more you can immerse yourself in, you know, combine the language and the medical environment just to go and help.
Right. You
know, would be a very good opportunity.
I didn't even. That's something I hadn't even thought of about mission trips. I mean, that is being involved with the medical type stuff. And I know there's quite a few agencies around in Kansas City that do medical missions trips as far as and being inversed in. Spanish culture, you know, 2-3 weeks doing that kind of stuff would definitely be some involvement for a high schooler or a college age student.
Absolutely.
So now let's look at somebody that is getting ready to graduate within a couple months of college, or somebody that just graduated that's looking for a job as a medical interpreter. What are some of these skills that they may need to, you know, land their first job?
Well, I think certainly, I mean, you know, looking in the on the internet and seeing what, you know, what jobs are available, right. Resumes out. I mean, it used to be there was, you know, more of the interviewing process, but, you know, I mean, word of mouth, you know, find out, you know, contact people, you know, get, have informational interviews. That's something that I did.
Okay.
You know, just you know, even, you know, and just at just see if somebody would take a 10 minutes of their time, you know, from at a hospital or you know, maybe the head of interpreting or something. I mean, yeah. Some of the hospitals around here have interpreting to full-time interpreting departments. Children's Mercy does, Truman Medical Center does. Just go and just ask questions, you know, and from there maybe you can find out, you know, what some of the job openings are. I will tell you for sure. Children's Mercy is an excellent place. They do a lot of webinars, you know, continuing ed as right. well. And there's some excellent trainers there that I've actually had come to my class as a guest speaker.
Awesome. Yeah. That's pretty good. And then now let's look at some advice for someone. They've passed their certification test. They got their job. They've been working as a medical interpreter for, let's say, 3 to 6 months. So they're doing all the things. What's some advice you would have for them as far as professional advice?
I would say definitely join our organization that we have in town called MICATA, MICATA. And the Midwest, I can't remember what, you know, I should have looked that up, but you can just go to MICATA.org. They okay. have yearly, I just did check this out. I just can't remember what the acronym stands for, but we have a conference every year. And this year is April 1st through 3rd.
Okay.
And you guys, you don't have, you know, anybody can go. You need to pay an admission.
Right.
But go get a feel for, you know, there's different, you know, webinars. It's like a, you know, Friday night it starts and all Saturday. But definitely join a professional organization. That's just the local one. But there's an ATA, the American Translators Association. That's for interpreters now as well. Translating's okay. around professionally for far longer than medical interpreting. So I would just say connect yourself with professional interpreters, a professional interpreting organization. Keep up your credential, your certification. Have colleagues. Have, you know, it can be a pretty lonely field if you're freelance like I am. So I have to really make an effort to connect with other people.
Yeah.
But if you're in a department, you know, you're going to meet other interpreters. So that'll be good. And I don't mean just Spanish, English. I mean, they're, you know, interpreters, you know, with other language combinations. So just, you know, keeping curious. I think that's the best thing. That could be for anything in life.
Right.
You know, be a lifelong learner. when you come across something that you don't know, I mean, try to learn something new every day. That's kind of like, what's one of my...
one of your quotes. Absolutely. Yeah. Do you have any book recommendations, speaking about learning something new every day, but do you have any book recommendations for somebody that thinks they might want to become a medical interpreter?
I definitely do. It's actually a book that I read when I was at the court and it was required reading for our course at Johnson County Community College. It's called The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down.
Okay.
And it's by Anne Fadiman, F-A-D-I-M-A-N. And it's about a Hmong child, H-M-O-N-G, out of California. And she ended up with epilepsy. But because of such a cultural clash, the doctors, who are lovely doctors, had a hard time really understanding. And the interpreter, the community interpreter, found herself, and there were several of them, at a real, you know, and having a real dilemma.
Yeah.
You know, not being able, you know, knowing the family and knowing, you know, what they thought of what was going on with their child. And thinking that it was, you know, a real spiritual connection, but also they wanted her to have medical help,
mm-hmm.
and also trying to keep things confidential. That's really right. hard when you're really, you know, enmeshed in a community. But it's a beautiful book, and it's a lot of people read it, not just, you know, who are medical interpreters, but it gives you a really good idea of what interpreting, you know, can be about.
Absolutely. So
that's my favorites.
I like that. It sounds like a good story. So my athletic trainer came up with this question at the high school. As an athletic trainer, she said, if you dislike blank, then this is not the right profession for you. Her answer for athletic training was feet, because of wrapping people's ankles and doing all that kind of stuff with ankle sprains. So if you dislike blank, then being a medical interpreter is not the right career path for you.
Okay. I would say if you dislike being on the sidelines or being an observer, it's off the field for you. You really got to be able to stand back and watch things going on. You cannot insert your personality and yourself in it. So I would just say, you know, you've got to be able to step back. If you want to express your opinion and get involved personally, not the career for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then to back off of that question is, if you do like blank, then being a medical interpreter is the right career path for you.
If you really love working with people, if you really care about improving their lives and connecting, bringing a bridge between two cultures,
then
it's the career for you.
Absolutely. I think that's a good, bridging the gap between those two cultures, I think, is a good way to explain it. And then kind of the last one of the quotes that you already mentioned was learn something new every day. But do you have a mantra or quote that you kind of live your professional life by?
I do. Be a positive and helpful presence.
Yeah, I could totally see how that works with the medical interpreting, because, you know, positive presence during that time with them, you have to be able to mesh those two languages together and make sure that they understand what's going on at that certain time.
And build that trust.
Yeah.
You know, make them feel that even though I can't express my own personal feelings, that I'm there and they can trust me. And that that was something I really, kind of a discovery for myself.
Uh-huh.
I don't share much about myself. I mean, I might say at some point I have, you know, two kids, I grew up in, you know, that kind of thing. But just the fact that nonverbal can speak so strongly, that they trust me, that I'm professional, respectful, I keep things confidential, you know, that was really powerful for me. Because I did have a friend that said, Melanie, I don't think you could keep your personal opinions to yourself, or I don't think you could not want to, you know, engage in a conversation.
Right.
And I really proved her wrong, because I really do love it.
That's funny.
For everything, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for spending this time with us today and explaining what medical interpreting is about and sharing your knowledge about all things medical interpreting, as well as classes and certifications and all the stuff that goes along with it. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I really applaud you for the wonderful work that you're doing. And I wish all of your students and parents and everybody well.
Thank you.
Good luck with everything.
If you've made it this far into the episode, I want to thank you again for watching. Please subscribe, share, and comment below with any questions or comments you may have. If you're interested in more information about other professions within healthcare careers, please visit healthsciencecoach.com and talk to your school counselor or academic advisor. As always, stay happy, healthy, and live life with passion.